Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Pick up your book bags, grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Give me my theme music.
Week 5 of the college football season. It's one of those weeks. Maybe we'll look back on it as the best slew of games of the season. I mean, it highlights, I mean, there are more than one highlight game. Penn State, Oregon, Saturday night. Georgia, Bama, Saturday night. LSU, Mississippi, middle of the day. You got Ohio State venturing outside of Columbus for the first time to face undefeated Washington. A&M plays Auburn. Indiana goes to Iowa City. You got sleeper games like Friday night, Florida State, Virginia. The Hoos have played very well. TCU and Arizona State. This card is loaded. And here to talk about this weekend is our guy, Denton Day. Host of College Football Overtime on Sirius XM. Host of our Washington Commanders pre- and post-game shows on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. Listen starting at 10 a.m. on Sunday and, of course, after the game as well. So these are the weekends we dream of. By the way, it's a crazy weekend because we've got Ryder Cup. I know you may not be into as much into that as I am. We've got incredible football in the NFL on Sunday, but we'll stick to college football talk. Give me the three in order that you're most excited to watch.
So I'm going to start Oregon-Penn State, just because you have Dan Lanning on one side, who, as you know, is one of my favorite coaches. But he has a little bit of a small issue of getting it done in big situations. He's burned us in the past.
Yep.
Against James Franklin, it was a massive issue getting it done in big situations. Then it's Ole Miss-LSU followed by Bama-Georgia. That Ole Miss-LSU game, I'm licking my chops at this one, Kevin. I think it's going to ultimately end up being the best game of the weekend, but I'm really excited to see Oregon and Penn State.
Yeah, so let's start with Oregon and Penn State. In-state college Saturday night. Penn State, by the way, had a bye week. Penn State hasn't played anybody, but they have looked good in not playing anybody. Oregon last week, just destructive again. They have been incredibly impressive all year long. Maybe the game at Northwestern, a little ho-hum from a few weeks ago. Who do you like and why?
So I like Oregon in this one, at least by the points. You know, Penn State's getting 3.5. I do think this one's going to be close. You know, you say Penn State's been good while not playing anybody, and I agree with that. I would say that Oregon has been great while not playing anybody. Like, my biggest issue right now with Penn State is that they start really, really slow.
Penn State, by the way, is a 3.5-point favorite. I just want to make sure. You said they're getting 3.5.
I meant Oregon getting 3.5. I feel good about Oregon getting 3.5. Sorry.
Yeah.
But Penn State has started really slow against bad competition, and they don't have that luxury this weekend because, you know, Oregon offensively with Dante Moore, he has performed at least in the first couple of weeks of the season the way that I anticipated he would, which is he looks really, really good. It was really smart on his part to take a season where he got to be a backup and a really good program, get developed, and then make the changes that he was not making or was not afforded to him at UCLA. So he's been really, really good. I think Oregon has a really good opportunity to hang. The only thing that concerns me is, as you know, whiteout games are just a little different.
Been
and Dante Moore has not played Yeah, exactly. You've been to them. Like, there's a different – there's very few games, Kevin, across college football that I think actually, like, really sway results. You know, Death Valley at night and a whiteout are the two probably top ones, and maybe going to Michigan or Ohio State for the first time. So I don't know how he's going to respond to the event that is a whiteout for Penn State. That's why I wouldn't feel super confident about just having them outright on the money. So I kind of like Penn State to win, but I think Oregon keeps it really, really close within that 3.5.
So for me, this game, I want to see what Penn State's defense looks like, and I want to see Oregon's offense, with the quarterback against a defense that's been impressive against very limited competition. I mean, they should have back-to-back shutouts, if not for that crazy play at the end of the Villanova game.
Yeah.
But to me, this game is about Drew Aller. Is he ready to take on an opponent like this in a big game and deliver points? Because I think Penn State's going to have to score. You know, if Oregon's offense is great, but, you know, runs up against a Penn State defense that can hold them down a little bit, still Penn State's going to have to get 24, 27, maybe 30 to win the game. Do you think Drew Aller's up to it?
No. I mean, yes, but no. I think he is. They're going to have to run the football. Like if they're going to put it all on Drew Aller, which is kind of what they tried to do last year, I thought, against Ohio State, and he just looked completely out of sorts.
Yeah.
If they're going to put it all on him, they're in trouble. I think this is a game where you have to rely on Catron Allen and Nick Singleton if you're going to win. And then allow your defense. You said 24. 25 was like kind of my sweet spot, so we're kind of in the same ballpark there. If you can score 25 against Oregon and your defense can hold them, you're going to be in a really good spot. But if you're going to have Drew Aller be a guy that, even if he throws it like 35 times, I think you're in a lot of trouble. I think this needs to be a game where you run the ball, you have success running the football, and then you ask him to make a couple of big throws rather than a plethora of big throws.
All right, let's go to your number two, because I actually agree with you. This is a very intriguing matchup, because I'm not sure if Lane Kiffin's team is legit this year, although you got to give him credit because, you know, as an example, they lost that game to Kentucky last year at home, by the way. It was a devastating loss. They could have lost to Arkansas, but they overcame that. They destroyed a team in which I think you would agree is a pretty good football team in Tulane last week. Meantime, LSU can't score. Forget about last week against Southeast Louisiana. They couldn't score against a very good defensive team in Florida and Clemson as well. I don't know where the rub is. Does Ole Miss have the kind of firepower that they've had in the past? We'll find out against a good LSU defense. But what do you think happens with Garrett Nussmeier in this game? Is LSU able to score for the first time in a real game this year?
I do think they'll be able to score just because Ole Miss's defense is not, you know, spectacular by any stretch. So I think there's enough talent there. But this is the first time in a really long time where it doesn't feel like LSU has a massive advantage at wide receiver. And that's their big issue with scoring. Because if you look at just the past couple of years, you know, you have Neighbors and Brian Thomas Jr. If you go back further, you've had, you know, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase. And then even further than that, it's Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. Like, they've been wide receiver U for a really long time. Them and Ohio State, they don't really have a game record at that position right now. And I think you're seeing that, and they can't run the ball spectacular either. But that's one of the reasons why Garrett Nussmeier is having a lot of problems and why they're having a lot of problems scoring. And, you know, the defense has looked really good. I've loved what I've seen from LSU's defense, but, you know, we're four games into the season, and if you kind of look back at who they played, they haven't exactly played a good offense.
No.
You know, Florida's offense isn't good.
Florida can't score either.
We thought Clemson was, or at least I thought Clemson was going to be really, really good, and they're really, really bad. So defensively, it was good. They had good performances against those teams, but that's not what they're getting in Ole Miss. You know, Ole Miss is playing the backup quarterback, who I think should be the starter moving forward, in Trinidad Chambliss, and I like him a lot. He was with me on, he joined me on Saturday, so I got to like kind of talk to him a little bit. He's a great dude, but he plays without fear because he's coming from D2 to the SEC, which that story I don't think has been highlighted enough, and I think it will if they win. I mean, this guy literally was playing D2 football last year, and now he's starting in the SEC, but he provides Ole Miss with the element of a dual threat quarterback, which Austin Simmons, the guy who started for them at the beginning of the year, did not. And if you look at some of the teams that LSU has played, DJ Lagway is not a massive runner of the football, and Kate Klubnik really wasn't running the football tremendously in week number one. So this is going to be a very new element against this LSU defense. I like Ole Miss. You know, Ole Miss is a short favorite at most books, but I like Ole Miss in this one. I think it's going to be really high scoring, certainly more high scoring than we're accustomed to seeing this LSU defense, but I really like Ole Miss.
Alabama, Georgia was number three on your list. Georgia, so impressive in that win over Tennessee, coming back in that game. That was their last outing, and Bama's been better since the opener. So who do you like and why Saturday night in Athens?
I like Alabama. I'm taking Bama full-blown on the upset here. I think Ty Simpson's been really good.
He has been good.
You know, Florida State's a good team. And we're seeing that now. Florida State is they're a good football team. I don't know that Alabama was ready in week number one. I think they are much more prepared for what they're going to see from Georgia and just understanding, hey, you're playing big boy football now. I kind of think they overlooked Florida State and the way that they've been able to use the games in between Florida State and this matchup against Georgia to get Ty Simpson comfortable. I mean, Steve Sarkisian and Arch Manning should be taking notes. This is how you use these layup games. He's looked like a completely different quarterback the last 2 weeks. This is not going to be a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. Like, this is going to be a knockdown, dragout fight, but I do like Alabama on this one.
So you mentioned Florida State. I think that's a sneaky game tomorrow night. Virginia can really move the football and can really score. They really should be 4-0. They lost to NC State. They blew a 10-point lead in that game. I think Virginia at home tomorrow night, Charlottesville will be packed. That place has the ability to be pretty good. I think this is a tricky spot and a sneaky, you know, kind of line, you know, under seven worlds on Florida State. I give Virginia a shot to win this game outright. Do you?
Not to win it outright. I do like the quarterback, Chandler Morris, but yeah, again, this is a very different team than some of the other teams that UVA has played. They're a lot better than NC State is, and I think defensively they're really, really fast. You know, I don't think you can simulate. That's been the one thing about Florida State that's impressed me the most. It's not been the offense, but that defense is fast, man. And, like, I don't know that you can simulate that in practice. They just have an element of speed that not everybody else does. I do like UVA to cover. So, that line is real. Like, it jumped out to me immediately. Well, and I'm also glad that we get ranked opponents on, you know, Friday night for someone that does a show on Friday, too. It's a lot easier to do that than, like, an unranked Big 12 game. I really like what Florida State is, but, you know, this game kind of being in between, you know, the Miami matchup is, it does give UVA a little bit more of a chance. And that's kind of why I like them to cover the number. I think they'll at least keep it close, maybe a backdoor cover situation. I think they'll keep it close, but I've been really impressed with Florida State.
I follow this team every year because my oldest went there and I saw some games. But I think TCU, and I think Sonny Dykes is doing a very good job. And this kid Hoover is a pretty good quarterback. They go to Arizona State tomorrow night. Another, you know, really intriguing matchup. TCU's ranked 24th. Arizona State had that, you know, one slip up. They had Mississippi State in trouble.
Yeah.
Ended up blowing that game. But I think we're going to find out a lot about TCU tomorrow night. And I think if they get that win, there's a real opportunity for TCU to be a playoff team.
Definitely. Definitely. Especially in the Big 12. But I was going to ask you specifically about this game. That line is, the flags are waving. Arizona State getting 3.5, laying 3.5 at home. I don't know that TCU's in a good spot there.
I think Arizona State's good, though.
I do think Arizona State's good. You know, you're right about that Mississippi State game, and a part of it is because, you know, people don't really think Mississippi State is all that good. They're better than they've been in past years. Still not great. They just blew that one. They completely fumbled that one away. I do think the winner of this game is going to have a really good opportunity and probably in the driver's seat to join what is likely going to be Texas Tech in the Big 12 championship. Because Texas Tech is fantastic. As you know, they paid a ton of money to make sure that they would be really, really good this year. But I kind of like Arizona State in this one. I think on a Friday night, they are weirdly good, it feels like, on Friday nights because they kind of are used to playing on Friday nights.
Yeah.
So I kind of like Arizona State in this one.
Couple of other kind of good football games. Ohio State at Washington. Is Washington capable here? They're 7.5-point dogs in Seattle, 3:30, Ohio State's first road game. What do you think about the chances of a close competitive game here are?
I got this one at 8, and I'm on a Washington at 8. We have not really seen Ohio State since the Texas game play, you know, any sort of good competition. But even if you look back at the Texas game, you beat a team with a quarterback at the yips.
Yeah.
And, you know, Washington is certainly not talent-wise in the same category as Texas. But I do think, you know, you're traveling across the country, something that Ohio State, it's still very, very new for Ohio State to be traveling all the way out there for a West Coast game in September. So there could be a little bit of issues there. I think Washington is good enough to keep it to within, at least within a touchdown. So if you can get it at 7.5, yeah, that's the best you're going to get, I would take it. But because I bet on it early on a Wednesday, I got it at 8.
You know, if Washington, you know, Ohio State, like you said, unimpressive when you look back on the Texas game because of what we've seen with Texas and Arch Manning. But they were up 16-9 midway through the third quarter against Ohio. Why do I know that? Yeah. I was on Ohio plus 30 in that game, and they ended up covering. Final score looked lopsided, but it was actually a very competitive game. You know, if Washington were to pull the upset, they would come to College Park next week 4-0 against the Terps, who are 4-0. Here's another game for you, and you know what side I'm on this one, based on the number. Early Saturday, Notre Dame at Arkansas. They have been waiting in Fayetteville for this game forever to have Notre Dame here. Arkansas's lost two in a row, both heartbreakers where they fumbled going in for the go-ahead score at the end of the game. I love Arkansas to win outright Saturday at noon. What do you think?
I am with you on Arkansas having a really good chance. I don't know that I'm not going to play them to win outright, I don't think, but I'm with you on them having a really good chance. I just don't really think that Notre Dame is all that good. I really like Marcus Freeman. I think CJ Carr is fine, but I just don't think that Notre Dame is all that spectacular, and this loss would completely eradicate them from the college football playoff. It would, you know, ditch them from the rankings, and they would effectively be a non-factor for the next couple of weeks of the college football season.
Yeah.
I don't think you can. I think their back is very much against the wall, and I would hope that Marcus Freeman is preaching that a little bit. You know, sometimes coaches are really, really weird, and they don't like want to preach negative stuff. I think you should be leaning into the fact that your back is against the wall and Arkansas is in a really, really good spot and they're fired up to play you. So I do think Notre Dame wins, but I'm with you that Arkansas is going to keep it close. I got them at 4.5, so I'm on that one. I just don't know that I'm confident enough, just based off of the way that their last 2 weeks have gone, to play them to win outright.
All right, for those that didn't see the news this week, the quarterback at Oklahoma, Mateer, broke his hand. He's going to be out for a few weeks. He was the Heisman Trophy front runner with Carson Beck at Miami. Devastating blow for an Oklahoma team that started 4-0, and I mean, Norman is excited about this team. That was a hell of a football game, by the way, last week against Auburn, because it was one of the only, you know, decent games on the card last week. So can they withstand this? They've got Texas in 2 weeks. He's not going to play in that game, we don't think. He might be back after that. What happens to Oklahoma without Mateer?
If they can somehow squeeze a win out against Texas, and then maybe he comes back a little bit earlier than the projected timeline, because I think the projected timeline would have him coming back against, I think it's Ole Miss. It's either Tennessee or Ole Miss. If he can come back a little bit before then, I think they'll be fine. Defensively, they're good enough to have a quarterback that can do just enough. You know, they get Kent State. You know, Kent State's terrible. They're going to, you know, blow the doors off of Kent State next weekend. But if they can just do enough to force Arch Manning into a bunch of turnovers and to completely fluster him, which has not been difficult to do this year because he's, as we know, he's been a little off. I think if they can get past Texas still unbeaten, they're going to be fine. If they lose to Texas, and then you're forcing a quarterback that maybe isn't ready to come back a little too early. You kind of put a little bit of pressure. You start to press a little bit. Then I think they're in a lot of trouble. Now, I've been of the belief this entire year, Kevin, that there's going to be an avenue for a three-loss SEC team to get into the college football playoff. And I've always thought that Oklahoma is going to be that team because that schedule is just crazy after Kent State. But you need to have John Mateer healthy for that. And if he starts missing, if he misses four games, I think they're in trouble.
All right, give me quick answers to these, for real or fake. Okay. USC.
Fake. But they're going to win this weekend big.
Oof, they are. They're 7-point favorites on the road at Illinois after Illinois got smoked. Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt is for real. Crazy, but they're for real.
I think you're right about that. What about A&M?
Oh, God. A&M is fake. I love Marco
Reed. Why do you say that?
I don't know that they'll be able to withstand the level of offense. They'll be able to keep up the level of offense for the entire year. He's gonna eventually start to do a little bit too much, and they're going to lose
Marcel
a couple
Reed
of games.
Talking about.
Yeah, Marcel Reed. They're going to lose a couple of games that they shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I get the excitement with Reed. I get the playmaking ability. I don't think he sees it as a passer, and I think that's going to catch up with him. Indiana, that was the most stunning result from last week. Now, I liked Indiana and laid the points with Indiana, but 63-10 in a matchup of two ranked teams. Does Cignetti have another playoff team?
Yeah, this Mendoza kid is legit.
He's
are very real. Now, we will look at that win potentially differently if USC goes and hangs 60 on them as well. Like, we'll look at it and be like, hey, you know, maybe it's not as impressive, but this Mendoza kid can sling it. And who would have thought, like, I know it's still early, but who would have thought in late September that the Heisman frontrunner is the quarterback at Indiana? What a wacky world we're living in 2025, but they are very much for real.
Is this guy Drinkwitz, the head coach at Missouri, a really good coach?
He is, and he has a... He's a really good relationship builder. Like, people that cover the SEC,
they're winning. You know, no one's expecting much from them before we start these seasons. Now, they had a decent quarterback, and they obviously had Luther Burden there last year. I don't think any of this was expected so far this year.
No, I don't think so. But I think his personality kind of distracts from expectations because he's silly. He's goofy.
Silly.
He's like a little bit more likable than Brian Kelly, but he does like a lot of the goofy things that we made fun of Brian Kelly for doing on the recruiting trail. So he's kind of a dork. And I mean that in a nice way. And that almost, you know, takes the expectations away from the team and puts it on him and kind of allows them to fly under the radar. I don't know if he does it on purpose or if it's one of those things that just happens naturally, but they really benefit from that.
All right, I got to run, but I was going to ask you about Matt Campbell and Iowa State, because if you look at their team and their schedule, they're going to be a factor in all of this as well in the Big 12. I know you said Texas Tech, and they look so explosive. But his teams are always overachievers. We'll talk over the weekend, and we'll talk on the air next week. Thanks.
All right, see ya.
Denton, everybody, at the Denton Day on X on Twitter. Don't forget, he and Linnell, Commanders pre- and post-game shows on the Team 980 and 106.7 The Fan. Charch next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Charch time. Paul Charchian, Fantasy Football Weekly, and Chop are his podcasts. Follow him at Paul Charchian. Of course, one of the best talking fantasy football. You know, I was just saying to Max in the break, this is a good game tonight. I think it's a little bit of an underrated good game. I mean, you've got an NFC West right now that really looks top to bottom much different than maybe we thought it would be at the beginning of the year. And I think we're going to find out a lot about Seattle tonight and whether or not they're going to be a legitimate playoff contender. What do you think?
Agree with everything you just said. There are a ton of great storylines that you would not have expected. Seattle and Arizona, which sounds about as anonymous as any game could be on a Thursday night, but there's a ton of great storylines here. And, you know, the NFC West has got, every team's got at least two wins, but I believe what's going to happen in this division, and it's going to start tonight, is Seattle's going to separate from the rest of the pack.
Wow.
And I think they're going to win this division based on what we've seen so far. This team has been better at almost everything than last year. And I believe there's some mirage to the 49ers who have played easy schedules. And God bless them for getting through all the injuries. But I think that we have a just sort of a knee-jerk reaction to assuming San Francisco's, you know, going to be really good every year. And they're 3-0 right now. I just feel like the team that's played the best out of this division, and maybe by a margin, is Seattle so far.
Yeah, my only problem with that, I see where they are defensively, and I think that, and by the way, I think they're well coached defensively. You know this. You saw what happened to Sam Darnold when things got tight and, you know, they pressured him in the big spots. I don't know if we can trust him.
Well, okay, totally fair, and we all thought the same thing. Here in Minnesota, you know, the Vikings had to make this big offseason decision. Do you let Sam Darnold walk without any compensation, might I add? Or do you keep him? And, you know, right now, Sam Darnold, Pro Football Focus's number one graded passer. Everybody was worried about how he'd fare under pressure in Seattle with what had been a very bad offensive line. But they put a first-round pick, Gray Zabel, into their offensive line. Sam Darnold, in three games, has absorbed three sacks. That's it. And he's doing it with the fifth deepest passing. So it's not like Seattle's just giving him all dump-offs. This is not a Tua situation, Kevin. He's averaging almost 14 yards per pass attempt. So he's throwing downfield and he's doing it well. So I'm trying not be a slave to my offseason narrative of Sam Darnold and what I expected to see happen, because it's not matching the play that we're seeing on the field right now.
I needed to look this up because I wasn't sure, but it explains it a little bit. Clint Kubiak's the offensive coordinator. So you're getting a lot of what he had in Minnesota last year with KOC.
Yes, Clint Kubiak has Vikings ties, and that does help.
Well, has Shanahan ties too.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct about that. He was with the Saints last year, and I just throw, you know, an asterisk on that for Clint Kubiak.
Yeah,
he was going out there with Jake Haner, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, I think, you know, there was only so much he could do, and now, you know, and look, Sam Darnold looks really, really good. I'm just, like I said, I'm trying not to be a slave to my offseason narratives and give him credit for how he's looked so far. And the Cardinals secondary, so far they've faced Spencer Rattler, Bryce Young, and Mac Jones. I think Sam Darnold is on a whole different level than those guys, and this is going to be a one-sided affair tonight.
Yeah, really interested to see. The odds makers, I mean, the sharp money, they've pushed that line from Seattle +1.5 to Seattle -1.5 on the road. Now, James Conner's lost. I mean, that's not going to impact the line that much, but it's a big loss for Arizona. But just one last thing, and you're going to know this faster than I am. I know what happened in the Pittsburgh game when Caleb Johnson, their rookie from Iowa, didn't know the kickoff return rule, and Seattle recovered it. That was the game-changing play. And then didn't they have, like, two special teams scores on Sunday against the Saints?
Seattle, yes, they did. They had Torrey Horton became the – I'm gonna get this slightly wrong. Torrey Horton had a kick return and a receiving touchdown in the same game and became, I believe, the fastest rookie to ever do both in one game.
He scored on a kickoff return. I know it. So the punt return was early. He had a kickoff return for a touchdown. Wow.
Maybe that's it. Yes. Torrey Horton two different ways. Yeah. Set an all-time record doing it. And that, by the way, he looks like he's a find as well. I believe a fourth round wide.
Actually, he did not. Started. He did not. Let me just correct you, because he had the 95-yard punt return, and then a guy by the name of Derek Young had a 60-yard kickoff return, but it wasn't for a touchdown. But they got big special teams plays in the game. Yeah.
But didn't Horton also catch a touchdown pass in the game? Yes, he did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
he did.
He did.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm sticking with my story. He caught a pass, yeah, and he had the return touchdown, and Young, you know, did it in his third game, fastest ever to get both in a game, something like that. Yes.
Specific to fantasy tonight, what's going on with Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I'm benching him, and I don't have him in many leagues because last year I was very gun shy, but. You know, here's what I'm going to give you: a couple of things that are really, really troubling about Marvin Harrison. This first one specifically for fantasy players. When he does not, in 20 NFL games so far, when he does not score a touchdown, Marvin Harrison's average finish is wide receiver 65. That is astoundingly bad. I mean, you're in a really bad spot at that point. Here's what's going on with Marvin Harrison. First, he's had a problem with drops. He's had drops in consecutive games.
Exactly.
Second, he has the worst separation rate in the NFL. He has the lowest separation rate, 2 yards, dead last in the NFL. And this, by the way, this includes tight ends. So Marvin Harrison is getting worse separation than 250-pound tight ends out there. And then there's Kyler Murray, who misfires at him a lot. And we can't always know, is Harrison in the wrong spot or is Murray, you know, missing him a lot? But, you know, regardless of whose fault it is, the ball's just not getting there. And then relative to tonight's game, Seattle's been a really good defense. I mean, last week, Chris Olave got targeted 14 times. He only managed 57 yards on 14 looks. So, I think we've gotten to a point where Marvin Harrison has lost all benefit of the doubt because what we've seen in a now increasing 20-game sample size has been just dreadful.
I know Ricky Pearsall hasn't scored yet this year, but, you know, he was a first-round pick. Remember, you know, it's one of the reasons they felt comfortable letting Debo go. And he's actually played well. Remember, he got, you know, had that incident in San Francisco, got, you know, with
shot.
A would-be, you know, attacker. He looks the part, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he's looked really good. And they're using him, you know, copiously because they're in such a spot. Right. And Ayuk's out. Juwan Jennings has missed most of the year. And so has, their tight end, George Kittle. So this whole passing offense has had to go through Pearsall, averaging 8 targets per game. And to his credit, the second year kid has looked really good. He's running among the most routes in the NFL, and he's averaging 127 air yards per game.
Wow.
So, you know, they're going deep to Pearsall. They like this kid, and to his credit, they've needed him, and he stepped up nicely. I've got him way up in my rankings this week. I think he's inside my top 10 at the wide receiver position.
Another, you know, wide receiver in the game tonight, Smith Njigba from Ohio State, another kind of later first-round pick from a few years ago. He is turning into a legit star, right?
Yep. Nobody's really talking about Njigba as one of the, like, 10 best receivers. He's not on the Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase level, but whatever that next tier is, Jackson Smith is right there. He's number 2 in receiving yards behind Puka Nacua. He's the 5th most targeted receiver in the league, and it would probably be more, except they didn't even use him much last week because they'd crushed the Saints by halftime and that game was over. Cardinals tonight are going to be shorthanded without their starting cornerback, Will Johnson, who's got a groin injury, so they've got a 5th-round rookie in that spot. Jackson Smith and Jigba is sitting on potentially a fantastic game tonight. He is my number 2 receiver overall for this week. Number 3 receiver, and I love his prospects.
Who are your top 2?
My top 2 are Puka Nacua and Nico Collins as he goes up against Tennessee. So that's And by the way, Pearsall, because you brought him up, he's my number four wide receiver this week. Times are changing. These guys are great.
Well, Nacua's really a legit, you know, again, it's hard to put anybody in the Jefferson Chase class, but Nacua is different, man. He is definitely a borderline elite receiver. We're talking to Charge. By the way, just one comment on the NFC West Seattle pick. You talked more about the 49ers, and I think the biggest competitor actually is I think the Rams are the biggest competitor. Mm-hmm. I think the Rams are a legit NFC championship contender, as long as Stafford stays healthy.
Yeah, that's the big X factor, right? You know, if they got to go to war with Jimmy Garoppolo, game over, and Stafford doesn't, to my eyes, there's no way to back this up metrically. To my eyes, he looks even more sort of stiff and upright than he has in previous years. I'm just, you know, back injuries always worry me, and I'm nervous about one blindside sack and Matthew Stafford's season is over. But at full health, the Rams are a very good defense that people don't talk enough about. Tier two defense.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you've got Nacua, you've got Kyren Williams. Devontae Adams continues to look fantastic. I mean, you know, really, Devontae Adams is going to the Hall of Fame. And he continues to play at an extraordinary level.
He's still banged really up, though, good. I think, this week, right?
He is, but unless something changes, we do expect him to play this week for Devontae Adams. I'm waiting around for Devontae Adams to, you know, for time to catch up to him. Hasn't happened yet.
Tell us what you think about our team, Mariota or Jaden against the Atlanta defense.
Yeah, I've started doing some work on this in this matchup, so I have put some time into it. Am I correct that Terry McLaurin is not going to go?
I mean, guys, I don't think Terry's going to be ready to go. Yeah, and Noah Brown likely could be out again. They could be really into kind of a skeleton crew receiver wise.
Yes, Luke McCaffrey got a bunch of extra time last week, and obviously that will continue, and he'll get pushed into a starter's role, and that's. You know, you and I have talked about McCaffrey a few different times since his drafting. I've been relatively lukewarm on him, but it's, last week he did score. I thought he looked okay.
Yeah. Bit of a busted coverage, to be honest with you. But, yeah.
I think that helps. Yeah, so is Chris Moore? Your starting wide receivers might be Luke McCaffrey and Chris Moore.
Maybe in Debo, yes.
Yeah, and Debo, right, running out of the slot. Right. Debo has the lowest air yards of any receiver. So air yards is...
But that's typical for him, isn't it?
It is. But, okay, yes, it is. This is how San Francisco also used him. But this is always my gripe with Debo and that usage. You know, if you never throw to him downfield, that means that whoever is on Debo, and oftentimes it's a strong safety, so for you guys to be, Jeremy Reeves, perhaps, you know, that guy can pinch up to the line of scrimmage. Now this means Debo Samuel has to make somebody miss. Now, he is a special back, and he can break tackles, a special receiver who can break tackles like a running back, but that's asking a lot of him when you're only throwing 4 yards downfield. So your quarterback's operating, say, out of the shotgun, and the ball's only going 4 yards. You're back to the line of scrimmage at that point or even behind the line of scrimmage. I just think it's tough to be an effective, for sure, fantasy producer, but also just downfield, you know?
Right.
I'd like to see Debo get used downfield more often.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
real quickly, flipping it around, I think Bijan Robinson, Tyler Allgeier, you know, you could make the case along with Gibbs and Montgomery, the best backfield situation in the league. They got blown out against Carolina, which makes them, for me, the way I think about things, very dangerous on Sunday. But Washington's defense, we talked all last year, like take anybody, any good running back against Washington's run defense, but it's improved so far. How do you see it?
Improved a ton. So for Bijan, he's at least 19. By the way, he has said it now both ways, Bijan. So at one point,
he likes Bijan, though.
He likes Bijan. So
you told us this a couple weeks ago.
He, in the preseason, he said, well, the real pronunciation of my name is Bijan.
Right.
But then in a Sunday night game, I don't know, some game, he said his name three different times. He said his own name, and he said Bijan. So I'm going Bijan now. Right. So at least 19 opportunities in every game, which opportunities are rushes plus reception. So he's, you know, he's very heavily used. But your run defense, get this, third best run stuff win rate in the NFL. Your run defense ranks number two by Pro Football Focus. And your team, and Bijan, who's an elite receiver, your team's allowed the fourth fewest running back receptions and the fourth fewest running back yards so far. So, you know, for Bijan, who is a special back, and, you know, nobody will be surprised if he breaks off a 40-yard touchdown, so he's that good. But your run defense is almost as improved this year as your pass defense was last year. And if you take away Bijan from this offense, the Falcons offense gets very, very mundane.
Yeah, I think the pass defense last year was a reflection in some ways of teams just lining it up and running it down the Washington's throat. This year, you know, I'm looking at DVOA right now. Washington's rush defense is fifth in the league. Take into consideration, they played the Giants without Andrew Thomas, a banged-up offensive line, and they played the Raiders, who have a horrendous offensive line and were missing their best offensive lineman. So that could be a part of this early in the season. As we know, small sample sizes can be dangerous. But we'll see, because Allgeier and Bijan Robinson and that offensive line, they can run the football. They lined it up and ran it right down the Vikings' throat 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
I don't know why they didn't do it against Carolina. I think they just got behind because Penix was a mess.
Penix was a mess, and they kept turning the ball over, and that was enough there. Now, before we pivot away from this game completely, you always make me a little bit smarter on your running back rotation. It looks like Bill's going to play. He's got, I think it's a calf or something that they think he's going to play through, right?
I think so.
Where do you have this, you know, right now, this thing is a wreck from a fantasy standpoint. You know, last week they shared one total target. Bill and Chris Rodriguez tied in snaps. Rodriguez led in rushes. McNichols broke the long touchdown, but he only had four carries. And then Bill salvaged what would have been a horrific fantasy day with that late touchdown. I don't know what to do with this thing, and I am very interested in whether or not
I don't have an answer for you. I don't.
Okay.
I don't think any of us have an answer. You know, I think every week's going to be different, Church, and I think the game plan, like last week, they wanted to come out and they wanted to set the tone by being physical. You know, the Raiders had the short rest. Washington had the long rest. Early 1 o'clock start for a West Coast team. They got a big kickoff return, and Rodriguez was the first back out there because he's a power back. They went six offensive linemen, and they ran it right into the end zone. I mean, Mariota scrambled on third and goal from the two for a score. But this week it could be Bill. It could be McNichols. They love McNichols. Like, I actually think there's a chance McNichols is part of the first and 10 rotation, as he was last week. They love him so much that they kept him off special teams last week for the first time since he's been here, because they knew he was going to have a role. And he's definitely the third down guy because he's their best pass pro running back. So yeah, I think each week it could be different, so that makes it hard to answer. That's the answer, is that we don't know. It's going to be opponent-dependent, I think, unless somebody gets a real hot hand, and then they may decide to roll with that guy a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought McNichols would be sitting on five targets last week, And the fact that he went untargeted has reshaped my thinking a little bit on McNichols. And I'm very interested to see if that continues. He's the only runner that can catch. They need somebody in that Eckler spot. It should be McNichols. It just wasn't
and
that way.
By the way, don't
week.
Forget Debo's and, you know, it gets carries too. So
it's
a bit nuts. All right. Real quickly, Jackson Dart and the impact on the Giants offense will be what?
It's going to be a net positive by a lot, potentially a lot. You know, Russell Wilson, you know, unlike Russell Wilson, Jackson Dart actually cares. He is a fierce competitor.
Russell Wilson's end of game Sunday night was truly despicable. I mean, if it wasn't Russell Wilson and his 14-year, you know, I think Hall of Fame career, I would have thought we were in a point-shaving situation given the point spread at the end of that game. The four throws that he had completely out of the end zone.
Yes, professionally embarrassing, and I think it does chisel away at his Hall of Fame resume. So let me ask you this. Russell Wilson, when we look back at his career, you know, this is going to be his last season in the league, so five years from now, when he's Hall of Fame eligible, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer?
No.
Is he an eventual Hall of Famer, or do you think he never gets in?
No, I think he does get in. I've gone through his resume, super impressive. He truly was an elite quarterback for several years. He wasn't Brady. He wasn't, you know, Peyton. But we talked about him in that next level, you know, class. And I know that he's not going to go down as the most well-liked, you know, quarterback for the organizations he's played for. But, you know, a lot of guys have been in that category over the years. I think he is a Hall of Famer. Not Drew Brees is a first ballot Hall of Famer, you know, this summer or next summer.
Yeah,
Russell Wilson, it'll take some time, but I think he'll get in. Why? What do you think?
I think you're exactly right. It's not. I think the way he has ended his career has ultimately hurt him, and you know whatever stat padding he has done has not helped him as much as ultimately his really, really bad play over the last couple of seasons has hurt the overall impression people are going to have. But when you're looking back, I think you're going to see the requisite stats. You're going to see the Super Bowl win and another win that he should have had two Super Bowl wins. And that was not, he did throw the game losing.
It should have never been called.
On a play that should never have been called. One of the worst decisions in Super Bowl history, the play call. But yeah, I think eventual Hall of Famer. But back to Jackson Dart, just to let people know a little bit more about him. What we saw in the preseason was a high completion guy who threw a 78% completion rate, but it was a lot of short stuff. But in college at Ole Miss, he threw downfield all the time and is fearless throwing downfield. I just don't know if they're going to use him that way. But where Jackson Dart's going to be a special fantasy player is with his legs. He has got a big body. He embraces contact downfield. And Brian Daboll, among the various reasons that he should be fired, if he doesn't give Dart copious designed runs every game, that is a fireable offense because Dart is a potentially special runner with the ball. And that's how you break open your fantasy scoring system is with quarterbacks who can run.
Great job. Talk next week. Enjoy the weekend.
Sounds great. Bye-bye, Kevin.
Paul Charchi and everybody. When we come back, Brian Diardo, CBSSports.com. We'll talk about the league and maybe a little Ryder Cup as well.
All right. Happy Thursday, everybody. Here's what's happening in the world of DC sports. The Nats, they get the win last night over the Braves 4-3. Andrew Alvarez gets the start, but Mitch Parker comes away credited with the win. Jose Ferreira comes in and earns the save. James Wood sets the bar pretty high after he reaches 30 home runs for the first time in his career. The Nats are off tonight. They will close out their season at home in a weekend series versus the Chicago White Sox tonight. The Caps, they get going in a preseason matchup versus the Philadelphia Flyers from Giant Center in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Puck drop tonight at 7 p.m. That'll be right here on the Team 980. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app. Type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1, and you can catch Denton's office throughout all the football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.